today we will talk about marker cues and variety of marker cues. And do we need them? What are they? And why they are such an important topic? Because I think they're all over the internet and all over the training world. And so many people use variety of marker cues for different locations of delivery, for different types of delivery, for different types of reinforcers. So what do you think about that, Emma?
Well, as always, it's like Ken Ramirez says, it's always going to be, it depends. It's like, we have to go all the way back to what is it that we want? What's the goal? Mm-hmm. And then set a few goals so that we know how to evaluate if we're successful or not. And then we can make a plan for how to achieve that. So to begin with, why do we, I think it might be valuable to back it up all the way to using marker cues, using a marker, like what's the point? What is a marker? Why would we use a marker? When do we use a marker? And what is it all about? Because I think there are both, just looking at the diversity of possible stimuli that may come from a trainer at the moment when the learner does something that they wish to reinforce, and that comes before the actual reinforcer, there is a wide variety, and sometimes it's really benefiting both the learner and the teacher, and sometimes it might not be as beneficial as one would hope.
So what are the possible issues we may experience with having more than one marker?
Well, the possible issue with having a marker versus not having a marker, if we start there, that's the only time that where I would see that it's an issue if we have a marker, is if the marker gives me a behavior I really don't want into my session. Okay. If my click already gives me a behavior that I don't, as a cue. So say I click for weave pole entry. This is a classic one for agility trainers. Mm-hmm. Click for weave pole entry, or click for aiming forward. If my learner has a really long history of click means treat, always means treat, and now I want to deliver a toy, then the click gets in the way of my toy delivery. Mm-hmm. Or if my learner has a really long history of click means look back at your handler because that is where the reinforcer is coming from, then if I want to do click and toss my toy or my reinforcer so that it ends up further along the path, like in front of the dog, even though I'm behind, then again, my click is going to be counterproductive because my click is going to get my dog to look back at me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in those scenarios, that would be a scenario where I might opt to just skip the marker altogether and try to figure out a way to deliver the reinforcer without marking.
Okay. Or, so faster than you would get, you have to be faster that way. Okay.
Yeah. So then you'd end up building stuff. That's when you have the agility seminar in somebody's huge, it's like an indoors facility, but it's not designed for dog training, where you have barriers and balconies up high so that you can put a person up there so that the toy can appear from out of nowhere. Okay. Or we have such creative agility examples of how can you deliver reinforcers without telling about it in advance.
Parachuting.
You dig a hole in the ground and then you put your toy in there and then you add a really narrow string to it. And when you pull the string, the toy comes shooting out of the ground.
Okay. Wow.
You never did that?
No, I have tried.
I think this is from like the pre-marker era, some of it, like before we started using markers, we would have to be, in order to have good timing, you had to be super creative about the reinforcer delivery and fast. Figure out ways to be creative and fast.
Okay, yeah.
And then, so be super creative and skip the marker altogether. That would be one possibility, so that the reinforcer just shows up. Mm-hmm. Another possibility might be to add to teach a different marker.
Okay.
So those that would be an example where if I have a weekend, an agility seminar weekend, and somebody has a dog that has click means always treat, or click means always come back to the handler. And we would like to be able to reinforce with a toy, or we would like to be able to reinforce further ahead. Mm-hmm. Then just teach a different marker for that different object, or for that for that different delivery. But right. that's a little bit different question, but I think it's really connected, because that is in retrospect, if you have a marker that is functioning one way and you wanted it currently to function in a different way, would it be beneficial to have to just teach a new one?
Yeah,
that's often the quickest. If you taught it one way, then it's often a lot quicker to just
and easier
teach a new one. Yeah.
And you don't need, because usually if you have to be more creative, and if you need to be, no marker, you need to be more creative, you need to be faster, you would usually need someone else to help you. You often need another person, and it gets complicated sometimes if you train all on yourself.
If the dog really, or if the learner already has a really solid history of click means treat only, it's pretty hard work. It's going to take you some time to introduce a new reinforcement type or a new type of delivery if the marker you have is already functioning as a cue for one very set behavior.
And I think this is important what you said. Markers are cues.
Yeah.
Because this is what we forget, right? Often we kind of treat them that they are just markers, right? But they are functioning as a cue, because there is a behavior after the marker. There is something that's happening. It's not just magically behavior is reinforced and nothing changes and the dog keeps going, but there is this break in the behavior that we just reinforced.
Yeah. Okay. Whether it is, and that might be the dog up on click, the dog might turn, the dog might stop, the dog might start. I mean, eye movements, looking, listening, those activities, those actions are also behaviors. So the dog might tune in with its ears to where might the reinforcer come from, or it might start looking with its eyes, focusing its eyes on where does the reinforcer come now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as you said, markers are cues, but also all cues, because this I think is also sometimes forgotten, all cues can, you can use any cue with the same timing, the same precision as a marker, and you should.
Whenever you can shape with cues, right?
Yeah. So whenever we give a cue, we should be super precise with our timing and super precise with our criteria for what the learner is doing when we give the cue.
Totally. Yes, we forget about this, because cues can absolutely function as a secondary reinforcers. And that way we can, I love the idea of shaping with a cue, that you can use, a cue to actually mark and reinforce a behavior.
Yeah. And this is what we do with the start button training all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's developing a presentation of some kind of stimulus as the first step in the reinforcer. So the dog does something and you show the nail trimmers and give a treat. Showing the nail trimmers would be functioning as your marker. And we often say that you should present the stimulus with the same timing as you do with a click. Yeah. However, what we also say is that it's gonna be a pretty, not the best marker. It's not gonna have the same precision as a click. Mm-hmm. Typically, absolutely, my cues don't have the same precision as my click.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so like a marker cue that we use most of the time because of its precision. That's why we choose clicker, right? Because of the precision and being sharp.
Yeah. It's a very distinct cue. It's a very distinct stimulus.
And it's definitely more precise than you said than your cues. Because it can be different.
Yeah. If I'm gonna present nail trimmers as my marker, or if I'm gonna say sit as the cue for the next behavior with the same precision, or if I'm gonna say good, it's not gonna be the same precision. Good isn't gonna have the same precision as my click.
Yeah. So because if you do a presentation, let's say this is a muzzle or a nail trimmer, and the whole presentation is the whole movement. It's not just a click. There is a long time of what we do here, actually.
Yeah. And there is also, I mean, it's all the old traditional stuff that we usually say about clickers. Well, it's precise. This is why we often use a clicker also in tag teach when you're working with humans. Then you say use something that's a neutral stimulus that doesn't have any connection with anybody with anything else, and that's just short and sweet and precise. And then a click is, although it's connected to dog training, and some people are hesitant in some areas of their lives to use it with humans, still we haven't seen anybody using, figuring out anything that works better. Everybody still uses the clicker a lot because it's so precise.
And
so then it's not a matter of it's a single thing, it's more it's a very precise.
Yeah, and also, isn't it the fact that something is that the stimulus is neutral at the beginning, isn't it make the conditioning, classically conditioning process, the pairing process, more effective? Then if
I
you
would
have,
guess you can experiment with that, since it doesn't have a cue function already. It doesn't cue something else. It's a neutral stimulus that's now developing into this specific cue.
Okay. Yeah. And I was thinking, because the topic of multiple markers, I was using like tons of different markers. I had a marker, different verbal marker for one type of delivery and a different type of delivery, like 10, I don't know, dozen of them. And right now I use clicker mostly. And I have maybe two, if I think about them, different markers, maybe three if I count start buttons. That are signaling a different type of delivery, and it's usually connected with forward movement, because I have a history with clicker that provides information to turn to me, so this is something I don't want. But I skipped using a lot of markers because they were not as precise, and I was getting confused using them. So what does it say about my learner, right? If I'm getting confused and I'm not being able to, you know, keep it straight, and also they were not as precise, and I was thinking that they bring more confusion. And the more I am talking, the more difference in my verbal cues there are, because when I'm saying yes, it practically never is just yes. It's like yes, yes, yes. We do it unintentionally, and it's very difficult to maintain clarity, right?
It is. And even more so if you're then coming up with a whole lot of different words, like I might have get it for taking the toy. If I want to use get it as my marker, it's pretty long, and it can vary a lot. It's like two syllables, get it. And it takes time for me to say, and it's definitely going to vary. If I'm running, I'm not going to say it in the same way.
If you're tired,
yeah, there's going to be more variation.
Exactly.
So it's a bit like, it's a bit like just skipping using a marker and just cueing the next behavior. In my thinking, I'm not sure this matters how you see it, but the way I see it is that those other things, they are cues for specific behavior. I have a marker, which is the one I use for my super precision. And then I have a bunch of cues for a bunch of different behaviors, and I can absolutely use them sort of with the same timing as my marker, but not as precise.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. This is exactly what I do right now. And it's been much more effective than trying to use a variety of different markers for precision stuff. And also what I notice my dog and many dogs of different handlers, that when you have those marker cues that indicate different location of delivery or different procedure of delivery, and you have like really a lot of them, then your dog is still looking for your body cues. Because I noticed that when people say, let's catch in this situation means I'm tossing a treat behind you. And usually what happens is people say catch, and then dog waits, because he waits for an additional cue. Like, what will my human do with his hands? Or maybe what he will do with weight shift? Because this is actually what is functioning as a cue what to do next. And I heard that this, because one argument for using multiple markers that predict delivery is that you want more clarity in the training session. You want more information for your learner. But I think it functions actually as an opposite thing.
I think there are a lot of experiments that need to be done on this, just like there are experiments that still needs to be done on the use of a clicker as a marker versus not using a marker at all, or versus using a word like good as your marker. What I have seen from the experiments that are done, because there are a few, but it's not been shaping any elaborate movement.
Okay.
I haven't seen any experiments of comparing a clicker with a word or a clicker with just reinforcer delivery in more difficult to teach behavior. The type of behavior where we as trainers would say you need good timing and you need to really split your criteria, because that's where the clicker, that type of marker would be the most useful. So if I don't need precision, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
if I'm not looking for the precision, it doesn't matter that much. But then I'm not going to get precision either.
Yeah, it's like a recall on the walk. I really don't care how they're going to come to me. I mean, I just want them to come from where they are to around me. And I can say, you know, later when this is in the maintenance phase, I don't care about the precision at all. I rarely use clicker on the walks with my dogs. It's just, okay, good dog, or great, go run. So, but I don't care about the precision.
Yeah. And then you saying, yes, go run, that is sort of giving a cue for the next behavior.
Totally.
Go run, and they can, so it will be a different type of marker. It's just not one you use for precision work.
I cannot imagine even using it for precision work.
No, it would be very difficult. But it would be interesting to see for somebody who is really skilled in using a lot of different markers. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to see what the stimulus control is, what behavior that they get.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can absolutely see value in having a marker that predicts placement.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would really want the behavior to be looking in the direction of that place. I wouldn't want looking for hand movement as my response to a marker that means the toy is coming or the reinforcer is coming behind you. I would want that marker to be as a cue to turn around.
Mm-hmm. And isn't
for it to have the full function, the mm-hmm. for it to sort of be beneficial in the way you would want it to.
But also, isn't it that when you have those location-specific markers, isn't it that if you use a clicker for a variety of different delivery types, isn't it that at some point, for some dogs at least, a pattern that you use for delivery becomes kind of like an integral part of the behavior?
That's a good point. I think that's another aspect of it that needs to be it needs to be upfront is that you can have your marker can have one specific meaning that is for the marker. So click always means look to you, for example. But you can also have a marker in combination with the setting. So it's absolutely possible for the learner to learn that the same marker means different things in different types of exercises. Mm-hmm. So if I click in my weave poles, there is gonna come a treasure toy flying. If my dog is within the weave poles, it's not near mm-hmm. the ends, there is gonna come a treasure toy flying and it's gonna land just in front of the dog within the weave poles. But okay. If I click in a healing, then my reinforcer is gonna come somewhere close to the dog where the dog can see a movement that indicates where it's coming from.
So
they will look, the dog will look in different directions depending mm-hmm. on what the exercise is.
Yeah, so, and do we need, if we have a situation like you just described, so the dog, the delivery is kind of like an integral part of the environment of the of this behavior, do we need another markers?
I have an add-on question on for that. Say we're working on the heel work. Sometimes you want to use a variety of reward deliveries in the same session. So maybe you do 10 clicks and treats, and five times the reinforcer is going to come in the same spot, but the other five, you're going to make slightly different decisions for every single one of them. Mm-hmm. I can see that maybe it would be a good idea to have different markers, mm-hmm. but there is no way that I, as a trainer, at least not me, would be capable of shaping with that kind of decision making. I don't even have that verbalized in my head where I'm gonna place the reinforcers. I guess if you look carefully at my training sessions, sometimes I change the precise placement of my reinforcer in a decision that's made after the click. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but it's quite possible. It would be interesting to know when do I decide exactly where the placement is going to be? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there is always going to be a variety of reward placements for the same marker.
But then, my concern is that often we forget about the part, the clarity part of the marker cue is that what it really means for the dog, for the learner. Because if I'm using those multiple markers in a healing situation, so let's say I'm deciding on the spot that I'm gonna now deliver differently in a different location and I'm using a different marker, then am I really sure that this helps the learning process of my dog or a horse? Maybe horse is not doing healing, but...
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
I'm sorry. So yeah. I'm doing, you know, because... From a learner perspective, let's say we're doing a portal game, right? And mm-hmm. suddenly you start to say different markers. And how fluent I have to be as a learner to recognize them and consider them to be still a reinforcers and not a negative punishment because I am having this big delay and reinforcer is taken from me because I didn't know how to get to it. So. This may work not only, I mean, there has to be really big fluency created in those mm-hmm. marker cues if we want mm-hmm. to use them.
And we get away with it when we're conditioning the clicker. I don't really do that anymore. I just mm-hmm. start using it because the learner will learn from the reinforcement delivery. Because mm-hmm. if I have a fluent behavior of taking the reward already, than just adding the marker. If they don't know the marker in the beginning, they can just go for the reward anyway. Yeah. And I can see that there is definitely a risk, like you were saying before, that mm-hmm. many dogs might not cue off the intended marker, but rather just wait for the next piece of information, mm-hmm. which is your body movement. And then it's no point whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think for me, when I am learning something, the less information I am getting from things that are not relevant to the new behavior I am learning, the better for me. I mean, the more complexity you get in the process on those less relevant parts, the more I am confused, actually. I don't know if it makes sense what I just said.
And it's definitely an experiment to set up, both mm-hmm. with human learners and with non-human learners. Can we do as good teaching? Can we get as much behavior with a multitude of markers as we can with if we have fewer markers?
Mm-hmm.
If it is the consequence aspect with a marker, that's like the idea, right? With a cue, we might focus more on putting together a chain. But if I'm using a marker, the whole idea with me saying this is my marker is that I'm primarily interested in its reinforcement function. I'm interested mm-hmm. in timing, in its value as a secondary reinforcer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then it's testable.
Mm-hmm.
You teach a couple of behaviors with just one marker, and you teach a couple of behavior with three or four different.
Mm-hmm. I was like, from my experience, but it was not set in experiment, so probably there were other variables that mm-hmm. were influencing the outcome. But I would say
I think the hypothesis is reasonable.
Yeah, for my learners and to my dogs, other animals I've been working with, it was always much easier when I had less variability over yeah. there. So yeah. the more, when it was needed, then yes, like with going forward. So with Captcha, for example, I do have a marker that means that don't turn back to me after you hear it, because the reward, the food will come forward. So just go forward. Mm. But this is practically the only one I need. And I can do the rest of it with Clicker. And it also helps, what I know is that if you praise your dog when you deliver your reward, your reinforcement, when you start to praise your dog, then when you use a verbal marker, it starts to blend. And
oh, that so easily happens. Instead of having yip, you have yay.
And sometimes you have yep, great, what a great dog, cool, let's do it again. And then like, what really was the marker, right? And yeah, it's hard even for someone on the side, so I'm not talking about when I'm watching a training session and someone does that, I have a hard time to understand what exactly is supposed to function as a marker here.
Yeah. And if it gives you the perfect precision and the perfect build of the behavior, then it doesn't matter. But we can see that there might be some risk that it doesn't. And I think I especially worry a bit that new trainers may come in not learning really about mechanics and setting criteria and using good timing. Because for the new human learner, it's mm-hmm. definitely the fewer things that they can get to learn and get really good at, the better. So I would say it's definitely an advanced tool for a trainer, in the sense of
mm-hmm.
what should we as trainers focus on first to become good at this training thing that we enjoy so much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And would you say that it's also a matter of how advanced is the learner?
Good question. Probably. Because mm-hmm. if my learner doesn't know, it's like my learner needs to learn a lot of cues, mm-hmm. a lot of, if I'm going to use different markers, mm-hmm. he needs to learn them all. If I'm going to use just my one marker, and I use the same marker, and then my reward delivery is the cue.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching my learner to follow where my reward delivery shows, I would find easier, a lot easier, than teaching my dog verbal cues for those different reward deliveries, if I were to have it as a really proper independent verbal cue, so that if I say behind, the dog turns around and looks back instead of looking at my hand
and waiting for
And if I'm just like you said before, if I'm gonna have additional cues anyway, then it gets a bit,
it doesn't matter,
unnecessary. Then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the cue, the verbal doesn't matter.
Yeah. If we use cues, they should make a difference.
Absolutely. So isn't it about like, so rather when you consider, if you're a trainer and you're considering, should I use those multiple markers? Don't use them because everyone else does it. Just
use them when you really need it.
And consider how beneficial it is for your learner, for your training, how it's going to get you, if it's going to get you faster and more efficient way of teaching a behavior, then absolutely yes. But know if you need, because, and I think we need to be honest with ourselves sometimes in training that, you know, if I'm saying behind and my dog needs an additional cue, I would have to really face this truth that this is not functioning as a marker.
Yeah, and if it's functioning as a marker, it's not functioning as a cue to go in that direction, look in that direction.
Absolutely. And one more thing that I've noticed is that sometimes if the learner does not respond correctly to the verbal marker, the human waits and doesn't provide information and then we have a completely different loop coming and completely different set of behaviors, and this definitely stops to be a marker cue for me.
Yeah, if there are criteria to be met and the risk of me not reinforcing, then I wouldn't, it's not functioning as a marker in the way I would like it to.
That's very true. And isn't it because with those different deliveries and marker cues, isn't it like another concern I have is that what are we really reinforcing if we use, so if, for example, I have a verbal cue behind, let's say with this, so my dog just is in a heel position, I say behind, and then I need to add a visual cue to help him do the behavior, then what actually I am reinforcing right now? What's my focus?
Because you're definitely reinforcing the look at you behavior with the delivery.
Yeah.
And just as you would if it was a click, it's just, then you might as well, if it's one behavior, if it's going to be look at me or look for where the reward shows up, if that's what my learner is doing anyway, upon my marker, then I might as well have the same marker. I think there might be some superstitious behavior going on the parts of trainers somehow, because we think logically that providing this more information is a good idea. Although maybe it isn't necessarily so.
Maybe it isn't, because it actually provides information not where we would want them to be.
Yeah, it's possible.
Okay, so this is a very interesting topic, and I think it goes down to having really clear ABCs and looking from this perspective in training. So whatever you do, if it's just focus on really clear loops in your training.
It would be, I think, beneficial if trainers experimented more with doing different things just for their training. Like, can I teach a nose target behavior with just giving treats with really good timing? Can I teach a backup behavior with just giving treats with really good timing? Can I teach a nose target behavior with click and this reward placement? Can I teach her like toss a treat on the ground? Can I teach a nose target behavior with click and a different reward placement, maybe more variable one? Can I teach a backup with a fixed reward placement, like always give the treat on the plate? can I teach a backup behavior with a more variable or flexible reward delivery, where mm-hmm. I can reward in position and I can reward out of position? Mm-hmm. And then once you've sort of experimented with that, well, then we can start experimenting with, well, can I do it? Can I have two different markers? One marker for this delivery placement that's always fixed, like I put it on a plate, and mm-hmm. one for when it's more variable. But actually doing the training, doing the experimenting, not just jumping to the conclusion that this or that is mm-hmm. the better option, but because they're all going to be possible. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to teach as long as we reasonably deliver some kind of reinforcer somehow contingently on the right behavior, we can still teach. But what we're looking for here is to teach even more efficiently.
Efficiently, yeah, and to make the process also the cleanest process for the learner, yeah. Right?
Yes, yes. With us, because we don't want a lot of time when the learner is taking a detour that's taking him further away from the next reinforcer.
Absolutely, and also from the next reinforcer to the behavior, right? So yeah. We want to provide this delivery and use the marker that will really make the process of delivery and then coming back, because this is not just about delivery and then a break, because usually after delivery and after consuming or playing, we have another round.
Then the next behavior always starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And this will be the topic of your next course at Trumplo.
It will. Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, because it's coming. Like, we can use this moment, actually, because it's great for summary.
Yes.
There will be parts of it will be targeted at actually a bit of what we were talking today.
Well, yeah, it will. Emily and I are super happy that we now managed to put together the information for the seamlessness from one reward to the next course that we will do this autumn. There is so much information to be extrapolated from all the little aspects of the training loop, just really zooming in on things like what we were talking about today and about criteria and timing and delivery patterns and how to set it up seamlessly so that the learner can learn the most and at the same time be on the best way to the next reinforcer.
Wow, that's going to be a great course. And I've seen because I haven't seen Emily doing the, now I've seen at Clicker Expo, but I've seen also a seminar and it was wonderful. People were, your seminar in Krakow, like people were really amazed by how really putting more attention to those details in the session can actually change and influence how effective it is.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun when you just, instead of changing the big things, you just start with changing the little things and see how big difference you can get from that.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And this is going to be an auditor's course only, the first one. Because since we were talking about that, like, why do we want this to be auditors only? And it's hard to do a single training session without going from one reward to the next. And here we're going to sort of slow it down so that we get to talk 1 week about reward deliveries and another week about how to handle mistakes, for example. And then it doesn't really make sense to start training in the beginning because so much of the information is coming later. So it makes more sense to do this full course, just providing the information and letting everybody think for themselves, and then we'll continue from there.
Awesome. Wonderful. Oh, that's great. I can't wait. And so there will be a link added to this podcast so you can register for Eva and Emily course this autumn. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Eva. It was great. And so many
thank you.
Valuable information here about market cues.
Awesome talking to you, as always.
Thank you so much. Hey, guys. So this conversation was not finished and I didn't press stop recording, so we kind of continue for a little while with Eva, and we decided that there a conversation was pretty good. There were a few interesting things that we should put together with the official board. So don't stop listening just yet. There are a couple more minutes that we want to share with you, because we just couldn't stop talking about the marker cues after we finished our conversation, the official part. So I think it's going to be worth staying just a little bit and listening to a few things we have to say, we said about marker cues, because they were really interesting, and we think they will contribute very well to the rest of the program. So just wait a second and you're going to listen what we were talking after official part. I want to provide more information. I want my learner to get more information.
And it's like, let's get out of the information thing and take some data of the actual behavior we're seeing.
Yeah.
And I want to provide, this is my pet peeve this week, I think. It's this focus on procedure rather than outcome.
Mm.
Like, I want to have better timing. I want to provide more information. I want this and this. Well, what is it that we want, really? We want better outcomes somehow. Mm-hmm. I want better behavior. I want higher preference from the learner to join my training session. Like, I want him to like it more. What is it that I want? Yeah. If what I want is my own procedure to be in a way that I have decided, then I'm sort of ignoring my learner. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and it's absolutely not making it more effective and efficient and ethical even for the learner.
No.
Yeah, and I think that we are focused in a sense, if we are saying I want my training to be more fluent and effective, I need to really define it, because otherwise it's just like, if what I'm doing is not working, then I have to change something. And we are.
Yeah. And it's like fluent and effective. This is Emily and I were talking about this when we talked about how to describe the seamlessness in our course. Like, yeah, seamlessness is beautiful. It's like, we love it. It's aesthetically clean, but that doesn't do any good. It's like, if it's not good for something outside of being pretty, we want it to give extra value. We want to get training happen better, or interactions happen better. There must be some measurement of better that is outside of the procedure.
Because if we are, of course, procedures, yes, we need to, we should think about procedures, but they are for something. They are not in the vacuum.
You have your goal, and then you have how to reach the goal, and then you measure the effect. Mm. The procedure is how. It's how to reach the goal.
Yeah, and if you're not reaching,
if it's not helping, if you're tweaking and improving and doing a lot of things with the procedure, and it's not helping you reach the goal better, that's no point.
Yeah, exactly. And with those multiple markers, I see people using them, like really adding them as many as they can. And not even, so they are thinking about what deliveries I may use. So I can toss a treat, I can give it from my right hand, I can give it from my left hand, I can give it behind, forward, to the right, like from all the sides. And then they add a marker to those. So they add a word to those. And then
I'm so curious. I mean, I don't find it that easy to teach cues to begin with, that I would want to have 10 of them just for fun.
No, and you are getting confused 100%, because I remember myself doing those things. I had like 10 verbal markers a few years ago, and almost every session I got myself confused. So how they were working? They were not working. It was like my learner waited for more information that I had to provide. Otherwise, you know, he was left in the limbo because he didn't know what to do.
And I can see also that there might be a risk that I as a trainer might limit myself in my reward deliveries, because I'm only going to deliver the reward in ways that I have cues for.
Yes. Yeah. That's
I didn't even think of that.
Yes, and this is what happens. Totally, when I think about when you said it, yeah, this happens. This happens all the time because people are, oh, I don't have a cue for that. Like, I don't have a marker for that.
I don't have a marker for that, so I can't use that delivery.
No.
Ooh. Then it becomes limiting. That's a real issue.
Mm-hmm. And I think that people are very concerned about introducing all those markers to. Now it starts for the puppies. So it's like a very, they consider it a very foundational skill to teach dogs to understand all those markers. So kind of like teach cues before they teach even reward procedures. Because like, oh, let's just introduce this. And by introducing this, they mean saying a cue and, you know, and there is this part that they forget actually the learning process of the cue.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And the learning process of like behavior first and then we add the cue to it.
Yeah. To
get the delivery pattern so that we have fluent behavior in the delivery before we add a cue for it, whatever that cue is, because it doesn't matter. It's the same if I'm using a clicker for 25 different reinforcement deliveries.
Yeah.
I still need to make sure that if I want to add one more version of my reward delivery, mm-hmm. I have to get that fluent first, the delivery in itself, before I put it in, before my click or before I put it into my training.
Yes, and what you said, it's limiting. Because people do it completely from the other side. So they start with those. So they don't start with the behavior. They start with the word. They start with saying catch and then adding the process to it. And then if they don't have a word, they don't use a different type of delivery because it's, you know, I don't have a cue for that.
Yeah.
It would be like if I
that
said...
That sounds problematic. It's like, so it's like we would like everybody to have... You can have one marker that can go with everything, mm-hmm. that you can add to anything. And you still need to teach it. Whenever you want to add a new reward procedure to it, you have to get the reward procedure fluent first. But it's...
Mm-hmm. Yes, because if I want to use a clicker for tossing a treat, I still need to teach tossing a treat. Because then if it's not taught and my dog is standing and looking at me and the treat is tossed long time ago, it's not working.
I can see the logic though in, well, why would you want to have the same cue for 1,000 different behaviors? Don't we usually say that you want to have one cue for each behavior? So the behavior will be, what we're saying is that the click is connected to an orientation behavior and then the reinforcer showing up is going to be the cue for the next behavior.
Oh, yeah.
So we're like separating the two.
Mm-hmm. This is important because
always having a bit of a chain in there.
Yeah, because that's what it is. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, this is important. I think I will just maybe I will cut the piece.
I think you may have to do that
and put it back because it was too important, especially after about. Yeah, I have to do that. Yeah.
There were some gems in there, so yeah.
Yeah, interesting. That's why I didn't turn off recording.
It just reinforced you keeping the recording playing.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, totally.